everybody, and welcome to a Sports Talk Chicago special interview. My name is John Zagluel, owner and operator of the site. Before we get started today, just a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, Instagram, and LinkedIn at John Zags, and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Also, if you're looking for a place here in the Chicagoland area to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for both adults and children, check out the Arts and Crafts Studio by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. You can find them at the Tinley Park Town Shopping Center at 7913 West 171st Street in Tinley Park, Illinois. If you have any questions, give them a call at 708-247-2100. That's 708-247-2100. Well, with the Cubs and Brewers rivalry and series in full swing right now, I thought it'd be fitting to have someone on who could talk more about this big-time rivalry and big-time series. At the same time, however, I wanted to get a different perspective. Somebody on the other side, somebody who supports and who is with the Brewers to talk more about this series. Luckily enough, I was able to get a true professional, someone who knows the Brewers really well and also has a very successful broadcasting career. I want to thank you, the listener, in advance for continuing to listen to my shows and this upcoming interview. So without further ado, here's my interview with our special guest for today. It's now time for our special guest. He began his broadcasting career with the San Antonio Missions in 1994. By 1998, he was a part of ESPN, calling select minor league and little league baseball games. He then moved to basketball, serving as the San Antonio Spurs sideline reporter from 1999 through 2007. Today, he is the TV voice of the Milwaukee Brewers, play-by-play man for the MLB on TBS, NBA on TNT broadcaster, Fox Sports broadcaster, and the voice of college basketball on Big Ten Network. Please welcome Brian Anderson to the show. Brian, how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
My pleasure. I'm doing great to be with you, and that's quite an intro. I feel old and well-traveled when you introduced me with all those places.
You know, I have to ask, how are you able to hold down all of those jobs like that? I mean, I mentioned at least four or five credentials that you've had now, and, you know, you've been well-traveled before. How have you been able to persevere and hold down all those jobs?
Well, I've been lucky for sure. I've never been fired from a job, but I think it's because I've always left before anybody could fire me. So I think, you know, you got to kind of time that out well. When you're starting to wear out your welcome, you have to disappear. But it's been a great ride. I think, as you mentioned in that bio, there's been stepping stones along the way. So it wasn't a quick rise to where I am now. It was kind of a slow, steady incline of minor league baseball, and then some of the smaller television jobs that I had. I did minor league baseball, did radio as a play-by-play guy on the radio. So that was kind of the starting point. And I did a lot of games, you know. I mean, I think that was what I try to tell young broadcasters is you need a place to, A, be bad, and you need volume. You need reps. And there's no better way to do that than minor league baseball. I did over 1,000 games in 9 years, you know, doing 140 games every season. So that was a really important foundation building block, you know, where I gained the most improvement and worked on my craft. And then since then, it's just been kind of one steady increase after another as far as volume and scope and pressure to get where I am right now. And who knows where that's all headed in the future.
I wanted to shift and talk about the Milwaukee Brewers and the Chicago Cubs, the series going on right now. It's still early in the season, of course, but what do you think this current series means for both teams down the road? You know, looking at the end of the year, last year, and in years past, both the Brewers and Cubs always vie for that NL Central Division title. What does this series mean come September or October?
Well, I'm in the entertainment business, so I hate to throw water on it, but it really doesn't mean much, to be honest with you. There's so many games. There's a tremendous volume of games that are left. The Brewers and the Cubs will, after this series, will still have 8 more games remaining head-to-head. So I think it's important now. I mean, as far as the June series, it does have importance. It's a fun series. Both teams are relevant. The Cubs have been the gold standard here the last 3 years in the National League Central. So there is a little more probably for Brewers fans on the line. I think they want to see where their team is, find out, you know, how they stack up against some of the best teams. I would put the Cubs in that category of one of the elite teams. And the Brewers, not proven yet, they certainly have the pieces to enter into that conversation. But right now, they're not there, and they're hoping they can be there. And that's how you measure yourself, you know. You measure yourself how you play against the elite teams, and the Cubs are one of those elite teams. Even with a slow start this year, they're still one of the best teams in the major leagues.
You know, for the Brewers right now, I know the team has had its troubles in the past, obviously holding down the division lead up against the Cubs. What needs to go right for the Brewers to find a way to win this year's division title?
I mean, that's a multi-layer question, right? So there's a lot of things that could really determine the outcome of a division title. I think the Brewers have to stay healthy. Their line is pretty thin. They do have depth, but most of their depth is in young players, minor league talent, and that's a lot to ask. And not to say you can't have a guy come up like Francisco Rodriguez did with the Angels in 2002. Nobody had ever heard of K-Rod. He wasn't even K-Rod at that time, but he was a minor league pitcher that they used for depth, and he came up and he lit the world on fire and helped them win a World Series. So not saying that can happen, but I think teams like the Cubs, the bigger market teams, there is still a big market, small market discrepancy in Major League Baseball. It's been trimmed a little bit, but it still exists in that teams like the Cubs with massive payroll, massive revenues can go get and absorb a player who is not performing and can go get who they want. So, you know, the Cubs are and the Red Sox and the Yankees, the Dodgers, they can go get pieces because they can always replenish those pieces down the road in free agency. And the Brewers really don't have that opportunity. So they could trade 4 prospects to go get a guy like maybe Chris Archer or maybe 3 prospects for Cole Hamels. They could try to go get someone that is close to being a reinforcement as a starting pitcher that would be a top-level pitcher, but the price that they're going to have to pay and the inability to go fill that gap on the back end next year, years after, in free agency is really where the major discrepancy lies. So the Brewers have to be good in all of those areas, and then when they have injuries, when they are in a slump as a team, which they are right now, you have to be able to weather those with the personnel that you have. And so that's really the determining factor. It can be done. It's been done quite often, actually. But the Brewers just don't have that safety net that a lot of the big market teams do.
You know, you mentioned pitching injuries. I know Zach Davies and Jimmy Nelson are both on the DL for the Brewers. What is their status right now, and how much do those two guys mean to the team's starting rotation?
Well, they mean a lot, and those are the two guys that would certainly be in the group of the top 3 to start the year. And I would add one more name, Wade Miley, who has not been with the Brewers. He's not a familiar name, and most people wouldn't even realize that Wade Miley's pitching in Milwaukee, but he's been hurt a lot. He got hurt in spring training, but he's a left-hander that pitched really well this spring, and I think they were very high on Wade Miley as being a part of that rotation. So, the Brewers have been without key starters all year. Jimmy Nelson, I think they're going on the system of he's not coming back. I think he will come back, but Brewers are operating in a way that he won't. because you just don't know. He had a shoulder injury. He actually injured his shoulder, his right shoulder, while sliding back to first base at Wrigley Field last year. He was running the bases. And it's a different kind of injury. A lot of pitchers who have shoulder injuries, it's on the front of the shoulder. His injury was on the back, so basically an hyperextension of that. And he had surgery to repair all the stuff that's in that shoulder. And I'm told it's an easier comeback and a better comeback for a pitcher because it's in the back. But I don't think the Brewers will even think about having Jimmy Nelson as a major part of the rotation until well after the All-Star break. And if you get him back in September and he's the same Jimmy Nelson, I think it'll be a major boost. I just don't know if that's going to be in the cards. He was going to be the Brewers' ace this year. He's starting to trend like a number one anyway, big power right-hander. So that's a major loss that they've been able to withstand this year. And then Zach Davies has a shoulder injury as well. His is not as serious. He has some inflammation, and they're trying to figure out why. So they're going to let him calm that down. He's been shut down twice already. That's a major concern. So I think, the general thought between those two guys, and really Wade Miley when you add a third piece in that, is that if those three come back, if two of those three even come back, and you're expecting two of them will, then you strengthen your bullpen even more, and the Brewers have had one of the best bullpens in the major league. So now you're able to bump a Brent Suter back into the bullpen. You're able to bump a Junior Guerra, who's been pitching great. So it really gives you a well-rounded core in your bullpen when you can get your starting reinforcements back. And the Brewers have three or four guys in the upper level of the minor leagues that have kind of been on a revolving door in the big leagues that have all shown great promise, guys like Jacob Barnes and Taylor Williams, Jorge Lopez. So they feel really good about their pitching right now.
Speaking of the Cubs and the Brewers, over the years it seems like the rivalry between both teams has only gotten bigger. Personally, I feel like it all started back in 2007 when the Cubs and Brewers were competing for the NL Central title, and in the end the Cubs won it near the final games of the season. What are your thoughts on this rivalry now?
Yeah, and I think Brewers fans would remind you about 2008 when the Brewers beat the Cubs at the end of the year to win the wild card game. Dramatic series. CC Sabathia pitched that final game, game 162, last day of the year. Ryan Braun hit a big home run against Bobby Howry that secured the win. And I think, when both teams are relevant, it's as good as it gets, because it's a 90-mile difference between the two teams. It's the closest that teams are inside the same division. There's no other division like that in the major league. So the fact that the Cubs are relevant and the Brewers are relevant once again, makes it great. I think social media has a lot to do with it. I think fans are fully engaged, and baseball continues to grow on that regional level. Our television ratings are off the charts from a regional perspective, and I know the Cubs are the same. And Brewers-Cubs are always the highest rated game, so you can measure the interest that's happening. And you have to remember that, this is a rivalry that really only has a birth from 1998. So the Brewers were in the American League all those years. They had a modest little rivalry with the White Sox. They're probably, stronger rivals in those years with teams like the Red Sox or even the Minnesota Twins. So this is a relatively new thing here, even though it's been around for 20 years, but it's not, the Cardinals and the Cubs that goes back into the early stages of organized baseball. So I think it just grows year by year, the proximity of the ballparks, and when both teams are good, you get a lot of fanfare, and it's not always pleasant. You wish it would be a little more polite, but it's a really tremendous connection between the Cubs and the Brewers, and then Cubs and Brewers fans as well. We certainly enjoy it every time we get to televise these games 19 times. Is always our biggest ratings of the year.
I wanted to now shift gears and talk about some NBA news. Now, I know you had called the Celtics and Bucks series with TNT, but looking at the finals, what was your reaction to the Warriors sweeping Cleveland in four games?
Well, it sounds a little pompous to say this right now, but it's not surprising to me. I actually was shocked Cleveland made it that far. It just speaks to the incredible talent and leadership of LeBron James. I thought Boston was going to take down Cleveland. I really felt good about Boston going into that series, having seen them a lot. Love the way they play, love Brad Stevens, and they really emerged as I'm not going to say a dynasty, but they could certainly be the next 10 years one of the great teams in the East. I think the Celtics and the Sixers are trending that direction, like the Cavs have been. So I was amazed that LeBron and the Cavs made it that far. I don't think LeBron James had nearly the talent around him that he's had on other NBA Finals teams, not even close. But they did survive the East, primarily because of LeBron James. And then when you get to the Golden State Warriors, I don't care who they're playing. They're a handful for everyone. I mean, they're one of the greatest teams ever assembled. I feel confident saying that. There's just not, you know, you can go through some of the greatest teams. And I happen to work with a guy who was on one of those teams, being Kevin McHale. And, you know, he raves about the Warriors and talking about the weapons that they have and the way they have been able to put this roster together, the way they've won. You know, playing deep into the season, as fans in Chicago know with those great Bulls teams, when you go that deep into a season every year and you're playing into June, it says a lot about the caliber of your talent and your organization, the culture of your organization, to be able to bounce back each and every year. So I was not surprised Golden State won the series. I was actually not surprised they swept them. I just didn't see a way that Cleveland could overcome Golden State on any level. Their best chance was game three in Cleveland, and they let that slip away. So once that happened, you knew it was going to be a quick ending.
You know, this was kind of a dismal showing for LeBron James and for Cleveland, and now that LeBron is going to be a free agent, do you see him staying with Cleveland or going to another team?
Yeah, who knows? That's the million-dollar question right now in the NBA. I don't know. And I wouldn't say it was a dismal showing. I think LeBron James showed how great he is during this postseason, because he is truly one of those players on the Mount Rushmore of NBA players. You know, I don't like the whole he's the greatest, he's second best. I don't like the ranking. I think when you're an elite, you're an elite. And I just think they had no answers for the Golden State Warriors. So I would say this was a major overachievement to make it to the NBA Finals for the Cavaliers and LeBron James. And I'm no LeBron James apologist either. I was stunned at how phenomenal he was every night in the playoffs. So where he's going next, I don't know. My hunch is that he'll stay in Cleveland, but I have no reason to believe that other than he's comfortable there, and that's, you know, he kind of gets to run the show there. You know, I was going through the list in my mind the other day. If he goes to a place like San Antonio, you know, he definitely will be the alpha dog, but there is a system in place in San Antonio. If he goes to Los Angeles, they'll give him a little more freedom, but I think Luke Walton is a pretty strong personality. And so I don't know. I think LeBron has free reign in Cleveland to build personnel the way he wants. He wants certain people playing with him, I think, to a detriment on some level. But I'm not sure he'll have that autonomy in other places, even though he is certainly going to be able to do a lot of things that he wants. But there's no place where he's going to have the freedom that he has in Cleveland, and the equity among the fans too. So I don't know. I'd be surprised if he left Cleveland, but I was surprised when he went to Miami. So possible landing spots could be, you know, the Lakers. San Antonio is the name, one that keeps popping up here with Kawhi Leonard and all that's going on there. I think Houston is, they certainly have the means to bring him in. And, you know, who knows? I mean, wherever he goes, that team will instantly become a possible NBA Finals team. And that's pretty easily said based on what he just did with the Cavaliers roster this year.
I wanted to now shift gears to your personal broadcasting career, and I'd love to hear your story of how it all got started. I know you were in the minor leagues for 8 years broadcasting before you got to the Brewers, so how did this all start, and how did you become such a recognizable figure in sports media today?
Well, to answer the last question, that's an easy one. I don't really know. I mean, that, you know, you put in the work, you do the best you can, and then it's really up to those who hire to make those decisions on who's going to promote you. I mean, I wouldn't be in a position for you to even want to interview me at this point if it's not for the Milwaukee Brewers taking a major chance on a guy who hadn't called a Major League Baseball game, or Turner Sports, or putting me in a place that, you know, they had an idea, but wouldn't really know that I would be able to call games at that level, Major League Baseball playoff games and NCAA tournament games and NBA playoff games. So that really just speaks to the people who kind of know the industry and go out and look at an announcer and say, okay, he has the tools that work for us. So I, as a broadcaster, you can't really worry about that or even think along those lines, because you just have to do what you do and try to do it the best you can. And then wherever that lands you, that's where it is. So that's the answer to the last question. It's not like I set out on a path to do all the things I'm doing now. I never even thought about any of that. Other than all I really wanted to do was be a Major League Radio play-by-play announcer. That's kind of where my start was. And I, at the time when I graduated from college, I was a baseball player in college, and I knew I wasn't good enough to play professional ball, and I got offered two jobs out of college. I was offered a scouting job. So the Cincinnati Reds made me an offer to go to scouting school for 6 weeks and then enter in as a professional scout and go, you know, scout major league players or potential major league players, go through the minor leagues and look at minor league players that are available for trades. And that's actually what my brother does. He's a scout, special assistant to the general manager with the Texas Rangers. So he was already kind of on that track as a player and then ultimately a scout. So I had that offer, which was very intriguing and paid a lot more. Or I had an offer to become the number two radio guy with the San Antonio Missions in the minor leagues. And I was living in San Antonio at the time and had struck up a relationship with those guys. So that really didn't pay much. I made $25 a game. I actually clocked in with the ushers, had a little time card and everything.
So, oh, wow.
I was told you're going to get $25 a game and you can't be here longer than 5 hours a night, which obviously is impossible when you're trying to broadcast a baseball game that may last 3 hours and you need to do your prep. So $5 an hour was about as good as it gets. But, you know, that was really what started it all. And that's kind of the path I took. I really was intrigued by the broadcasting side. I felt like I could bring a little bit different talent to it, because I did play, you know, and I played at a collegiate level. I was a scholarship player. My brother was a major league player, pitched for the Cincinnati Reds. So I thought I could bring a little bit different perspective to it. So that's what I did. And then at that point, I just treated my broadcasting like a golf swing. You know, I had some flaws in my swing and my speaking voice. I had a Texas draw. I didn't have any breath support and all those mechanical things that I needed to fix. And I didn't, most importantly, I didn't connect it to my character or the kind of the person that I was. I just treated it as if I needed to fix a slice. And so I methodically would do a game, listen to it, try to do better the next day. And it's such a cliche and a silly thing to say, but it really was a day by day, let's be better today than you were yesterday. Let's be better this year than you were next. I can remember putting demo tapes together every year. And so every season I would put about a 5-minute demo reel together to send out to prospective employers. And my goal for those demo tapes was to be able to replace everything on that demo tape from the current year, replace everything that was on there from. So if I wasn't able to do that, it was a bit of a failure for me that I didn't get better, you know. And I remember there were a couple of years where wow, wow, in 1994, I had three or four calls that were way better than I did in 1995. I would assemble all the highlights of throughout the year. There'd be 40, 50 minutes of highlights, and I would cut that down into the best 5 minutes. So not to take you too much into the weeds, but that's really how it works. It's not, oh, I'm a good announcer, and I'm a good guy, and I'm going to get all these jobs. That's not how it works. You have to put in the work, and you have to, you know, work smart and know how to improve your craft and how to prepare better, how to prepare faster, how to deliver that information, all that volume of information that you're assembling, how to deliver that to an audience, how much of that do you deliver to an audience. So I think all those things really matter when you're in this business, and I don't think people talk enough about that, because you can't cheat your way up. You will get exposed so fast that you really have to put in the work, improve your skills. And I still do that to this day. So I still listen to highlights easy now because it's all on the MLB app. I can just literally listen to it in the car. But I want to know how it sounds and what works, what doesn't, and try to tweak and tweak. I'm getting older now. I've been in this business over 20 years. So, you know, there's certain things that are kind of what I do, but there's a lot of things I will add to the picture as I continue on in this industry.
And on a final note, you call baseball, basketball, some football, and even golf. I mean, you're quite a busy person. I wanted to know, what's your favorite sport to broadcast?
Whatever they're paying me to do. Not to be a smart aleck, but that's true. That's the truth. I played all the sports growing up, all the sports you mentioned. And, you know, the biggest difference in all of those is just vernacular and how to speak about the sport, the things that you may say when covering the sport. And I think it's important to do what you love. So I love being around all those sports. It makes me better. Doing the NFL on CBS made me a better baseball announcer. Doing the NBA on TNT makes me a better golf announcer. Doing MLB makes me better at basketball. So I enjoy what I do. I love the fact that I get to do all these sports that I grew up playing, and there are a lot of similarities in them, especially when, from my perspective as a play-by-play announcer, because I'm a storyteller, and you're trying to capture a scene, put some subtitles on it, and brand it as whatever it's going to be, but brand it as this game that your voice is now a part of the soundtrack. So that doesn't change. The vernacular, the vocabulary changes, and how you prep, and just the length of the game and whatnot, the pacing of the game. But it's pretty natural for me. I mean, I would say baseball is the easiest for me to do because I'm so ingrained in the game that I can go step into any baseball scenario, which most announcers would tell you is the hardest sport to call. But for me, I'm in it so deep and have been such a baseball fan and a player, and it's the culture of baseball is just kind of in me. So that's an easy transition for me always when I do a baseball game.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was quite an honor and a pleasure to have you here, and feel free to come back anytime in the future. Had a great time with you today.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
And a special thank you to Brian Anderson for being on today's show. We talked about his amazing broadcasting career, some NBA and MLB news, and the path that he took to become such an accomplished sports broadcaster. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Also, if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to the website. You can find the box on the homepage and enter your email address. From now on, once you subscribe, you will receive articles and podcasts directly to your email for you to view and read. Thank you again for listening to today's show, and have a great day.